monitor.
Okay, I'm using my phone. Okay, so colleagues, can you see the agenda? It's two items merged into one, so to speak. It's the briefing by the chief logistics on various challenges within the supply chain and environment, and then the duties and responses to the maintenance raised by the office of the on the status of workers review. And then the last item is consideration and adoption of a stability resolution. So those are the two items for today. Apologies, Brian.
Yes, sir. Chair, we have an apology from Kosiko Lekulu, who is unable to attend as he is attending the Public Service Committee. We also have an apology from General Olumisa. We also have an apology from Minister Mapisa Nkakula. Those are the apologies that we have, Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much. Are there any apologies, colleagues?
Good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning.
I'm Major General Steve Obu, the President. I would like to give an apology to Steve Obu. He was a very good minister to attend, and he asked me to come.
I had a problem. Can you repeat that apology for SILOC?
Okay, yes, SILOC is another very urgent matter to attend. So here is President Bill that they are thinking to stand in.
Yeah. Colleagues, do we accept that apology?
Chairperson, can I just raise a matter? Yes, there are always exceptions to the rule, but I think, you know, this has been, you know, on the agenda for quite a while and has been planned. So, you know, if the CELOC has spoken to you and given you a good explanation, but, I mean, you know, it seems like in some cases it becomes a trend. That the chiefs don't attend our meetings and then they send representatives. And, you know, we must hold, you know, the chiefs are accountable. And if it's an exception to the rule, I don't mind, because there are always exceptions to the rule. My concern is the exception is becoming the rule. And I really want you to get into this and making sure that there's no this easy way out. I mean, I don't know what the higher priority is than the portfolio committee. I would very much like to know what is a more higher priority than us in terms of our constitutional obligation and role that we have to play. So I'm not happy about this at all, I must tell you. Thank you.
I'm also not about this understanding the challenges that they are within the supply chain. I'm tempted not to accept the apology and request that the matter stand down until the time when the chief is back. And colleagues, that's my feeling for now. All right? Colleagues, do you get your concurrence?
I couldn't catch it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. The matter stands. Yeah. The matter stands down. And then it takes us to the matter is the DOT. But just before we deal with the DOT, this is on the side of the. Who's leading the delegation from the department?
And this is raised that is the forum that really deals with those issues. We have also requested the services and our internal audit division to assist the 73 procurement centers across the country to ensure complete accounting and reporting of the irregular expenditure and also to the history of the various procurement centers. Now, the chairperson here on slide number 6, we just wanted to address the issues of material irregularities and the issue of consequence management. The AG issued the department with 3 material irregularities, and those material irregularities related to a contract on asset management that was issued to 2 companies. The second one related to the issue of the jet fuel, and then the third one it has to do with the issue of the occupation of the airport park. When I assumed work in 2020, these matters were already there. I then instructed both the acting internal auditor as well as the CFO that they appoint team in September so that then we can start with the investigation. I was just only on the job. And the purpose of those chapters was then to conduct investigations on those 3 issues. And I must say that also that we don't necessarily have in those structures the capacity to investigate, but because of the importance of the matter, we felt like this is the best that we can do, at least to give it the attention it deserves. The report was then finalized and we had agreed with the AG that we will submit by the end of November 2020 with the recommendations that came out of this investigation. And we were on time and submitted the report at the time that we were expected to do so at the end of November. The department agreed that out of the 3 material irregularities that we issued by the auditor general, and that is the issue of the asset management contract and then the office building, which is the EcoPark contract, and we did not find each other with the auditor general on the issue of irregularity or the matter of the jet fuel contract. The Defense Act also checks, and I think that I have alluded to this matter before. If you look at the Defense Act, it doesn't allow the accounting officer to charge military personnel, because then that can only be done by other uniformed members. To that extent, I then wrote to the Chief of the Defense Force, requesting him to charge the Chief of the Services and Divisions and their employees and structures that they were identified the recommendations, and in terms of Section 45, they are also required that once you give the various chiefs of services the resources both human and financial that they have to account for that. And that was the basis from where we hope that even though we are prohibited by the Defense Act, that we still have Section 45 of the CFMA that states that the various structures, once given the resources, they've got to account for them. I also wrote to the Chief of the Services and Divisions who have incurred financial irregularities, and that is way back in February of this year, where I instructed them to finalize all investigations into cases of irregular and substantial well-being wasteful expenditure and to revert to my office by the 30th of June of this month. So this week we are supposed to have a meeting where we're going to look at these things and just to make sure that we are on course, that by the time we hit the deadline of 30th of June, that all the work that needs to be done would have been done. I also tasked the Adjutant General. The tasking was twofold. One was to look at, we also made those investigation reports available to him, and then he wants to look at that and then draft the letter, and that will then be given to the officers, and then those letters were then going to be hacked by the chief of the defense contact, then go to the different instructions. In my understanding, in my discussion with the adjutant, I'm not at this point aware that they have been sent. And then the second issue that I asked the adjutant general to address for us is that we do also have civilians that will be embedded in a uniform environment, and they also report to those people within the uniform environment to say that even if it is not now, but in future, should we be confronted with a situation where such officials should be accounting or consequence management has to be exercised on them, how do we deal with that measure? So those were the issues that I instructed the Adjutant General to look at. And I also further escalated the matter to the executive authority to raise the issues, because then it was basically an update on all three issues that has been raised by the Auditor General. And I think also subsequently the Office of the Auditor General did write to the Minister on those three material irregularities. Now, in relation to the issue of the investigation chairperson, when irregularities do occur, the various services that is on slide number 8, the various services and individually incurred as described by the PFMA and irregular expenditure type of national treasury. Even in most of those board of inquiries, I think some of them, they have made specific investigations, and of course they have been directed to the uniform environment. And I think Chairperson, what one needs to explain is that most of the procurement that we do in the department, it is in a uniform environment. We hardly procure anything from the secretariat. So it means that the issue of the investigation and consequence management will always be an issue that we need to deal with. And besides then using the effect of Section 45 of the DFMA, it becomes then very difficult to really deal with that. And when we would have to act from the secretariat point of view, we will do so. The Inspector General of the DOC, General Buhari, has a directorate called Anti-Corruption and Anti-Fraud, which is for short in contact. Among other things, what that and corruption identified through whistleblowing. And once they have done their investigation, they will then forward, if they feel that there is a case to answer, they will forward that to the military police. On slide number 9, that has been on the basis of instructions from myself and the chief of the defense corps, also in the investigate high value irregular expenditures with the assistance of the forensic audit company and the forensic section of the internal audit division. With regard to fraud and corruption and criminal cases, the military police works in conjunction with the Dakar unit, and where elements of corruption and fraud have been detected, the military police will then take this investigation further. And then when they feel that there is a criminal case to be answered, then they will refer the cases to the magistrate court, to the commercial crime court, and to the military court of justice. And then we also do forward these ones to the court and also to the staff. And some of the recommendations will come specifically saying that such matters must then be forwarded to the police for further investigation. The cases have been identified by March 2025 relate to criminal and corrupt cases being investigated by the military and police. I think already have hundreds of police investigators. And I think in our engagement with the Admiral Maposo, that's why it was mentioned that some of these cases may be investigated over a period of 5 years, because the 179, they are not only, they are not patients at issue, they are investigators that we have in nine provinces to investigate 4,000 cases. And that in itself is very difficult, but it also issues that hinge on the capacity with these issues. The cases have been identified by the Auditor General to be finalized relating to criminal and corruption cases that have been investigated by the military police and the case as just they estimated. And I think we will still have an opportunity to come to the control committee. As you would recall that in March we did present on a number of irregular expenditure, and we were requested that we must come back to the control committee, who will be invited either in May or in June, to present and then give you the status of all the investigations that relate to issues of fraud and corruption, and then also give you, in addition, the aid analysis of those cases. Reasons for the delay, Chairperson, are attributed to some of the cases being sent to us as a whole. What has been the case is that when we refer the cases, they join the queue. And we did actually, when we presented in March, promise that we will then have an engagement with both the home and start to try and engage them, so that when we refer the cases to them, they deal with them quickly, so that then it doesn't take a lot of time for them to finalize them. So it's an issue of dependency that if we send them for further investigation, then the matter is our hands and it goes to those institutions. So we are still, we are starting engagement with them, and then we are continuing to see how best we can work together so that we can bring some of the cases to finalizing. And then part of the other issues is the availability of food services. Chairperson, I think we are all also concerned in the sense that the longer the case is dragged, then also some of the witnesses become difficult to find. And then also even some of them, you find them that their memory is not really as good, you know, if had the issue been dealt with almost immediately. And then and also we have a problem where there is continuous postponement of trial cases at the CPS court, which sometimes also take anything between 3 to 5 years. And then there are also issues about the availability of prosecutors and investigation officers and court appearance team. Accused have the right to utilize their own lawyers, which are continuously being changed. That is also part of the issues. Some people are become good at meeting the system by then continuously changing their representatives, and that also then adds the time to that it takes to finalize these cases. Now on page 11, slide number 11, here we are trying to keep the status of the 7 high cases of irregular expenditure. And on the left, dealing with the issue of irregular expenditure, 2 investigations have been finalized. Recommendations are in the process of being implemented. 3 cases were investigated by our military police, and the police case number has been issued on this one. And that is at that point, also in final count. And these cases are currently within the Commercial Crime Court. There is 1 case with the SIU service provider to take back 41 million rand. But also, I think that we have been approached by the HOC to say that the SIU is dealing with the issue of the recovery and the potential for us to get more than the 41 million rand. And then the HOC approached us because then they said that they are then receiving the criminal aspect of the case. And then on the right there, the constitution expects that there are some cases that have been finalized and recommendations are in the process of being implemented. The other issue, Chairperson, I think that arose from last week's meeting, was the one that talks to the financial reporting line, and this is within the finance environment. So this is an organogram that depicts how our finance is structured. So there at the top, you have the CFO, and then below him, you then have four executive directors that are responsible for the areas that we are allocated to on that slide. And then reporting back to the CFO, the chief director for accounting deals with financial statements and the payment of suppliers. The chief director for budget management deals with the budget allocation for the department and also control a budget control and monitoring. And then also she looks at in-year monitoring of the spending. And then the chief director financial services also deals with financial control and compliance, coordinates issues of audit functions, and then also looks at HR and logistics management issues of the finance division. And then the last one is chief finance, which is that is responsible to deal with a uniform environment. This one entails also giving advice to the chief of the SANDF on behalf of the CFO, and this is in relation to financial matters, the issues of compliance with the financial law, as well as regulations and policies. And then also continuing with the financial delegation, in terms of section 44 and 45 of the CFMA, it states that the accounting officer for a department may, in writing, delegate any of the power entrusted to him or her or delegated to the accounting officer. A delegation may either be to a specific individual or to the owner of a specific post in the relevant department. And also a delegated officer of the department then is responsible for the effective, efficient, and economical and transparent use of the financial and other resources that are made to them. And hence I spoke about section 45 earlier on, Jefferson, in relation also to the issues of the exercise of consequence management. The accounting officers, the chief of the SANDF, and all chiefs of services and divisions have unlimited expenditure budget delegation amounts in terms of their financial delegation, but are restricted within the areas of their responsibilities. From a procurement delegation point of view, the procurement within the Department of Defense resides under the command of Chief Logistics and not the Chief Financial Officer. The Department has 73 procurement units across the country. The procurement delegations are given by the accounting officer to each unit. The delegation amounts, they range between 5,000 to 5 million rand with a central procurement service center, the CPS. Which are both in Pretoria and some of some centers in Cape Town, having the highest delegations that are given to them. The procurement amounts given are the following: 5,000 RM, 1 unit, and then 30,000, 20 units, 100,000 in 43 units, and then 1 million to 7 units, and 5 million in giving to 2 units. And I think this is our attempt to respond to some of the issues that we raised in the city of Brazil. And we're happy to take the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, speakers, for the presentation. Colleagues, the matter is now on the table. See, just before I open it up for discussion, I just want to raise the following matters. Yesterday I went through the guide, Treasury guidelines on irregular expenditure. And
they're mentioning that, I think it's number 22. It says in terms of sections 88, 1H, Roman figure 3, and 51, 1E, Roman figure 3 of the PFMA, the accounting officer or authority must take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against any official in the service of their respective establishments who makes or permits irregular expenditure. Is DM in the meeting? DM, welcome.
Thank you, Chair, and to all honorable members of the committee.
Thank you so much.
I have just joined the meeting to connect.
Okay, we've just completed the first presentation. It happens to be the only presentation for today because on the first presentation where we requested the Chief of Logistics to take us through the challenges within the supply chain management, it was reported that he was unavailable due to other engagement, and he had delegated General Kyogu. We thought the matter was so serious that we are not taking now a presentation from any person below a chief. Is the chief and above. Even if the chief will not mind, the chief, if the chief delegates a person to do the actual presentation, but he or she must still be in the meeting. So we then stood that matter down, and now we're dealing with the DOD's responses to the AG's report that they presented last week. So now the sector has completed the report, presenting the report. We are now dealing with questions. I'm the first person to make a comment. I've now started. Now, so I'm saying in terms of section 38(1)(h)(3) and 51(1)(e)(3) of the PFMA, the accounting officer must take effective and appropriate disciplinary steps against any official in the service of their respective establishments who makes or permit irregular expenditure. And the sector says the Defense Act limits her responsibility in respect of these sections to take disciplinary actions against the uniform members. And as a result, she has written to the chiefs who have incurred and divisions who have incurred chiefs of divisions, the accounting officer is reaching to the chiefs, to the chief of the SNDF, requesting him to charge the chiefs of services and divisions and their employees and structures as per recommendations of the investigation reports and in terms of section 45 of the PFMA and irregular expenditure. The executive can investigate and make findings. But if the findings implicate members of the, the uniform members, she can't. She's prevented from executing the findings insofar as they require her to disciplinary steps against them. And it does appear that most irregular expenditure so far recorded in the register of irregular expenditure happens in that environment, within the uniform environment. So, and they are saying that, now, she says that what the chief does, the chief of the defense force does, he appoints a board of inquiry, which will then investigate the transgressions, the alleged transgressions, if the matter implicates members in uniform. So if you have a situation where you have the sector with powers that she delegated to the officials, but she cannot investigation, make recommendations, and cannot discipline them. That's the situation of President Lee. And the chiefs is hardly before the portfolio committee to account. And we've done it once when we insisted. And I'm convinced that you're correct when you said if you have a responsibility, you bear accountability. In other words, accountability is the corollary of responsibility. We've entrusted you with the resources and you must account on them. We've given you a responsibility and then you must account on the performance, on your performance against the responsibility. And we hardly call the chiefs to appear before us. Now who have the responsibility to take action against their own members within their own divisions, who are found to have transgressed the PFMA? And it takes forever to investigate. In some cases, they've gone even 7 years without any conclusion inside. So I think now we must structure the way we hold the department to account. See, it's our act that has, we've entrusted the CFO with some responsibilities, but she can't perform those responsibilities alone. She must delegate them to officials, the majority of whom are in uniform. But our act has limited its limits, exercise of discipline when it comes to transgressions against the PFMA. Now, I think we must be creative now in the manner we deal with this thing, because I can tell you, you will call the accounting officer to come before us the next time if we're not happy with what she presents today. But she's still making the same point. Yes, I've done what I could, but I can't take it to its conclusion and then close the matter on irregular expenditure. I can only investigate it. But when it comes to disciplinary action and recovery, because it's disciplinary action and recovery, if there's to be a recovery, I can't do it because I'm limited, and my hands are tied behind my back by the defense act. If either we amend the defense act or become creative in the manner we hold, the department to account. I thought I should say this, colleague. That's one part, and the second part is the budget. And the supply chain is within the uniform members. And that's the first issue when in other departments, and even in terms of the treasury regulations, I've got them before me here. They say that the supply chain must be within the CFO. Now, if it was the intention of the department that having a CFO who does not appreciate the exigencies within the defense force and why the department did not, I'm just asking this loudly. Why the department did not say, okay, it's fine. Even as we appoint someone who is a soldier, but that person must be a CFO, a qualified CFO, in the same way as you do with the health, SAMS. SAMS is a soldier who must be at the top, must be the Surgeon General, but you don't take any person and make him a Surgeon General. That person must be a doctor, a qualified medical person. Now, why are we not doing the same and then have a proper CFO located within that environment so that we know that this distinction that exists at least is covered by the fact that the CFO is within that environment, because it is that environment that holds the bigger share of the budget. Right now, we have seen what the CFO is responsible for. It's largely policy. And then within the CFO, there's a person called Chief Director of Finance. I didn't have a chief director. I can't see the level of a chief director. Let me just check it. I hope he's not a chief director, but they're saying he's a chief finance. I don't know what level this person is. Whose task is to advise the chief of the SNTF on financial matters and to ensure that they comply with financial laws, regulations, and policies. Sitting where I'm sitting, I foresee a discipline. I suspect that this chief finance is a person in uniform, because any other person who's not in uniform can't perform this responsibility of sitting and advising the chief SNTF on matters finance and comply with financial laws and regulations. I don't know what the situation is there, and I would be surprised if the person is not himself or herself a uniform member. But I'm saying there lies a difficulty. Now, I'm passing that. And then the second point, we ask the department to come and present on irregular expenditure. I think it was Chief of Logistics that came. And they told us, and they selected the areas that they thought they wanted us to move. I mean, they selected a few. When in actual fact, this project is 72 irregular expenditure occurrences. And we asked them to come and present on all of them. And I have not seen that. And in addition, there's 71 areas of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. 71 And again, there's an issue there. And then the last point is when the AG says, look, we've identified this irregular expenditure because we're not satisfied as to the completeness of the irregular expenditure. Go back to the population and check if there aren't any further irregular expenditure, because from the sample we detected from the population, we found this. So it is, the probability is that the probability is higher, is very high, that the small irregular expenditure that has not been disclosed by the department. But what the department does, it becomes possession. It ignores the aging until now that the CFO is switching to the done some is reaching to various authorities and asking them to to finalize the accounting office writing to the chiefs of services and to finalize all the investigations. No. It's somewhere where they are asking them to, all right. Well, the CFO has requested all the services of internal divisions to assist the 73 procurement centers across the country to ensure the completeness, the complete accounting and recording of irregular expenditure. Only just happening, just now. Not the first time I hear about this, that they're preaching to them, but we don't get to each time when we ask about this, we are told that they've just preaching to them. But we don't know what is actually happening since they're preaching to them. You know, an update on the action being taken. And we don't hear the internal audit saying this is in motion and this is what we are picking up as the witnesses in the system. So these are my challenges. I'm sorry, colleagues, who have been taking this long. But I thought I should just, add what I consider to be major challenges within the environment. I'm sorry for this. I'm not going to comment again. I'm now closing. I'm now opening.
Chair, you're muted. Chair, you're muted.
Sorry. Thank you very much. Sorry, my apologies for taking this long. I'm now looking at on the screen. It's Marae, it's Thabo. Over to your colleagues, Marae and then Thabo.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I didn't mind what you have said and the time that you took, because I fully subscribe to your concerns that you have raised. And obviously I appreciate the fact that you have raised it. It is quite clear that, we cannot do the things that we have done in the past on a similar way and expect a different outcome. In others, we have to act differently, and therefore I'm very, very much welcome what you have said. And it means that there are some initiatives and responsibilities to be taken by both us as well as the accounting officers, the sector and the office. And even if we must go as far as recommend amendment to the Act, because quite clearly, we have seen in the past and we have heard many, many times, and I've even heard it from the previous Parliament, similar situation, and we have not resolved this as yet. So I am very much in support of you, and I think that we must certainly, act in a very creative way of resolving this in a permanent way, where it is not up to someone to determine whether they want to comply or not, or whether they want to do this, and when and how they want to do it. There must be legislation, and there must be consequences for not complying with the register and the CLOC, and then specifically the role of the chief of finance of the SNDF. Because I share your concern, because it's no clear in terms of the authority of that person. It's not clear in terms of, you know, why things are action in relationship when procurement is done by CLOG, whether CFO is involved, whether the chief of finance who represents the CFO is involved, and to what extent there can be interaction. I also would very much like, in terms of what you have mentioned about, you know, you must have a doctor at the medical health services. I would very much like to know the required qualifications for the CFO of the department, the chief of finance who represents the CFO at the SNDF, or the chief of the SNDF, and then the CLOC in terms of qualifications, because these are highly technical, legal, but also financial matters in terms of compliance. Chairperson, if I could just go back to the beginning, I want to thank the SECDEF for the presentation, and clearly I think this, what you have put in your presentation is much appreciated, and it seems like a new broom can sweep clean, and I really, really hope so. And we know that you've not been in the office for that long, so I think it's also fair to give you the opportunity to sweep clean, you know, as a new group. However, there are so many matters of serious concern that we cannot grant you a honeymoon period where we allow you to find your feet. So this is the kind of acting now, and really, you know, I want to urge you, and we will support you. I will certainly support you for doing the right things for the right reasons. Chairperson, I want to ask the SECDEF with regards to delegations, and she's clearly indicated that her office can delegate to whatever they want to. We have experienced in the past with many commanding officers, whether it's for units, whether it's for bases, many of them as share their frustrations in terms of procurement, and that they have got very little delegation or delegated authority to do procurement. You will recall when we visited the land border sites, and specifically in Kumasi Poort, where that commanding officer has shared with us his frustrations for buying tires, and the vehicles must stand because the tires are centrally procured, and then they are questioning everything that they are doing, whereas one would think that they can be delegated authorities and responsibilities and accountabilities with that to some of the lower institutions and bases. So I'd like to ask about that specifically, and then linking with that, on your last slide, SECDEF, you have indicated the procurement amounts, 5,000 for one unit. What do you mean by one unit? Because I can assure you, and I recall very clearly in the previous parliament when we visited the special forces in Pretoria, I think for Trafalgar, they have shared with us their frustrations for buying tires, because one tire might be 10,000 rand. So in other words, they can't buy a tire. As simple as one tire, and one would expect that that there must be some more adaptability in terms of certain units. If it's a pen, if it's a book, if it's things like that, yes, then 5,000 rand for one unit. But when you look at some of the units, 5,000 rand is a total waste. You can't work with 5,000 rand. So there must be some more creativeness going on there. Chairperson, so if you can respond to that. Chairperson, irregularities. It seems like irregularities with some people and some units have become seemingly an acceptable norm. It seems like, you know, there's no accountability for irregular expenditure, and especially as a reoccurring matter, and somehow the sector must assure us, and if not, you know, if we are not satisfied, we will have to look at other means from our side that people are certainly held accountable and responsible for irregularities. It just became a too a norm, not an exception to the rule. It becomes the rule, and that's why I think National Treasury is acting so harshly against the department in terms of the budget as well, because I think they seemingly think that there's no seriousness on the side of the department. On DACAF, DACAF, if I can ask the sector, what and who are they investigating? Is it only uniform people that they're investigating? Is it any staff on whatever level? In other words, hypothetically, can they also investigate the accounting officer? Can they investigate the sector? Can they investigate the chief of the SNDF? Can they investigate the chiefs of the divisions? So I just want to add that. And then with regards to the military police, I've heard of concerns, and I think that is what we have experienced many times in the past as well, and at least the perception of that. Can she indicate to us really, you know, the capacity and the capabilities of the military police, specifically with regards to investigation capabilities, and then you know, prosecution? Because without that, it means that the military police is not effective at all. Chairperson, the last point that I have on my side with the sector is that the Auditor General reported to us on irregularities with regards to the Cuban medicine procurement. Has anything happened on that side, and has she got any feedback to give us on that specific matter? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabez. And the Honourable Mufle, and then the speakers after Mufle.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members and colleagues. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, sir, you are.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, you've covered most of the ground in terms of your question or input or concern that you raised before Honourable Murray. I will not take long because you have covered me, Chair, but clearly there's an indication that there's a problem with regard to how the finance department of the GOD is structured, which is divided between the civilian section and the men, between the civilian section and men and women in uniform, which creates a problem or a challenge that you have clearly articulated to. And I think previously we had an engagement with the sector around getting the structures to align with what we perceive to be consistent with the PMFMA or other departments. Maybe, Chair, we must look into how police, because I think police has got also civilian section, but mostly it's men and women in uniform. How are they structured and how are they able to do this in a manner that is effective, efficient, and in line with what the PMFMA or National Treasury prescribes. If you may recall, the challenges that are caused by this structure were recently highlighted by how the procurement of the heparin or interferon 2B was undertaken. It has indicated to us that the manner in which DOD finance is structured, or the portfolio under CFO and the chief block is structured and they are not talking to each other, has resulted in a challenge that we once had to deal with as this portfolio committee. And to this date, Chair, we have not received the reports of any action taken against those who undermined the processes. Because if you recall, Chair, the CFO was in the meeting and said to us, I don't know what happened. We have noticed that even when the CLOC came to present to us what transpired, the chief procurement, who reports directly to him, was not even a party to that meeting, because I want to assume as well he was not aware of what happened. Instead, somebody else outside the CLOC and the chief financial officer came to report on methods of procurement which they must directly account on. And I think if we don't come closer to that, command will distort what we seek to achieve, or undermine the structure that are put in place or recommended by the National Treasury. We have made a decision, Chair, to the third step to say this challenge cannot continue in the manner that the finance department is structured divided between the CFO and the CLOC. Maybe it's high time that they integrate and have a system that will, a structure that will align to the system and will speak directly to what the National Treasury prescribed. Maybe, Chair, I'm not sure whether it's a question of the Act or it's a question of the structure within the DOD, or it will take a will from the SecDef and the chief, the new chief of the Defense Force, to agree on what should happen to address this structural challenge. But I think as a committee, we are very clear as what is it that we want to see to avoid some of the things that we have seen in the past. And as you have clearly said, some of these things happened because the structure is divided between the CFO and the chief block, and that on its own has made it difficult for consequence management to be implemented, because we expect the chief financial officer to account over something that he is not responsible for, and it becomes difficult. As much as we want him to account, he will just come to this portfolio committee and say, hey, I don't have much powers over those that are reporting to the CLOC. And you go to the CLOC, you don't find joy in terms of how things have been done, and seemingly there are no consequences. I have made an example with the procurement of heparin. Today, there is no action that has been taken against anyone who has undermined the structures or systems that are there. And it continues to be business as usual. Whether the AGS identified and recommended, nothing has happened. So we can't continue as if it's business as usual, whilst we are clearly can see that things are not really going in the right direction. As much as we appreciate the efforts of the new sector, but also I think she is also having limited powers over the men and women in uniform. So it's something that, Chair, I think they must tell us how are they intending to resolve, because it's not what we are raising, it's not you. They are quite aware of it, and in one meeting they acknowledged and said they will move towards addressing this particular structural challenge. If they can share with us how far are they in terms of addressing this particular challenge, we'll appreciate, we'll hear from them and just to get a sense how far are they, because this is not a matter that is of concern to us. It's something that they are aware of, and they've discussed it with us in one of our meetings. So I'll be very much happy if they can give us progress in terms of how they are dealing with this matter, how far are they to address this particular challenge. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chabo. May I now recognize any speakers?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I also want to thank the speaker for the presentation. Chair, and it seems that there will be a light at the end of the tunnel, but to reach that end, we really need to do proper reporting. Chair, maybe from my side it's ignorance, but for me the reporting is open-ended, and we will not be able to do effective oversight if there's no time frame. For example, Chair, on page 12 on the investigations, she reported, for example, two investigations are finalized and recommendations are in the process of being implemented. When was it finalized and what is the delay in implementing the recommendations? My second one, Chair, is the AG report, that there's a process of records review from the side of the AG, where they identify key areas where they assess progress in implementation of action plan, but there will be no change if it does not have an impact on the issues, like irregular expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, or consequence management. Those reviews are quarterly. So my question to the sector is, what is her view on the impact of this session? Then, Chair, on consequence management is, what is the expectation of the next audit outcome from the SATEF side? Do they think that the measures that they put in place are effective? And then, Chair, lastly, except for the letters writing to different divisions or so, there's no urgency in addressing the problems. For example, letters are writing in February, responses are only awaiting in June. It's 3 months, Chair. So why not appoint a dedicated team to specifically focus on those and look at progress 2 weekly to report in June? Because when they report in June, the accounting officers only then discover that there's nothing been done. And then it takes another 3 months, Chair. So is there a dedicated team, or is it only writing the letters, wait for 4 months, and then send them back and wait for another 4 months? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Perkins. Let's dialogue, SADF, really. And Deputy Minister, I will thank you at the end of, maybe after the SADF is coming. And because these issues are really worrying us. And for as long as they remain unresolved, we move in seconds. Keep talking, about the same matters all over again. I mean, I'm looking at the, what you call this, it's the National Treasury Regulations on the supply chain management, a guide for accounting officers. I mean, 1.2.3, a particular requirement of the PFMA is that each accounting officer undertakes a risk assessment for his or her institution. Risk management acknowledges that all activities of an institution involve some element of risk. Okay, we know. I mean, what we are discussing is a major risk. But the hands are tied behind your back. You are unable to step in and correct it due to the limitation of scope. But it's a major risk. It says 2.5.1 in terms of section 38 and 51 of the PFMA, accounting officers are fully responsible and should be held accountable for any expenditures relating to SCM within their line of responsibility. Any expenditure incurred should be subject to appropriate regulation and accounting officers directives, or any expenditure incurred should be subject to appropriate regulation and accounting officers directives and procedures. And then there's the section 2.5.6 that deals with the CFO and the SCM being placed within that environment. And then there's a section that deals with training of SCM officials. So let's dialogue. I mean, you the department, for example, the soldiers commit themselves to a tune of 300 million rand, buying pepperons. And the CFO doesn't know, and we're not too sure if the sector, was consulted or appended her signature to that, and actually approved the procurement. I hear that both the sector and the CFO have unlimited financial delegations. It means that any one of them can approve any amount of money. But at what point the sector says, no, you can't go above this, it's me and only me, so that you keep care as to how much each unit can go up to, including the chief of the defense force as well. So then as we have two prime authorities that have almost equal powers insofar as financial delegations are concerned, but those delegations come from the sector. He is a sector who says, okay, chief of defense force, unlimited delegation, and you don't have to come back to me. I don't know. Let's discuss it. You've heard colleagues raising issues. If you forget some, I'll help you. And because I was also taking note at the same time. Let's talk. Let's dialogue. I'm extremely concerned about this situation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, if you may allow me, I just go to the Defense Act. And I want to draw your attention to Article 10. It says departmental investigations by the Secretary for Defense. And then it reads to say the Secretary for Defense may, in respect of any matter concerning his or her capacity as head or accounting officer of the department, may instruct any employee or member concentrated in six affected or concerned the defense force, instruct the chief of the defense force to convene a bottom inquiry or to have such matter investigated by the military police. Otherwise, deal with it or have it dealt with in accordance with the law, or D, institute a special investigation as may be provided in law. Now, dear sisters, I think that I like the point that you have raised, because then otherwise, unless these issues are resolved, we are going to find ourselves stagnant in the same place. Because then, on the other hand, the PSMA says an accounting officer is given financial and human resources, and by virtue of you being given those, it means you have got to account for them. And I think none of us can run away from that. We're given resources, we utilize them, we have to account for them. Then section 45, when I am given the resources, I cannot use the resources myself to do the work of the Navy, to do the work of the Air Force. Then you then give devices to those structures. So for lack of elegance in my expression, then it means those chief of services also become accounting officers for the resources that we are giving to them to be able to carry out the work that they have to carry out. And that's why then I have then written to them. Now if you look at it, and that is where you see the clear contradiction. Yes, I am the accounting officer in terms of Section 38, but once we instruct us the responsibility of running their work and we give them the resources, they want to account for this situation. Then secondly, Chairperson, let me say that Secretariat is 1,600 people. As we speak right now, we are almost 73,000 strength in defense. So the balance, if you subtract from the 73,000, the 1,600, it means over 71,000 is the structure that we have to exercise control over. So I think even just looking at that, there is a lot of usefulness. The issue is where they are, what could I say? What is different in defense as opposed to the other structures? Now, if you look at PSMA, PSMA is written with other departments in mind and not necessarily the way things are unfolding in defense. So then that makes it a little bit difficult. Now, if you look, HR, I remember that when I was preparing for an interview, I went to the website. And I was looking, and I couldn't find HR under the responsibilities of the Secretary for Defense. And where does HR resolve under the Chief SASDF? So that is also another thing. And those are the two main resources that your Section 38 of the CFMA refers to. And those are the two resources also that Section 45 talks about if you have to account. So you have HR, which is there. You have procurement, which is there. Now, our two huge procurement stations is Simonstown and Pretoria here. So invariably, you would have to dig in. So that is also the issue. Chairperson, can I raise the issue? So you say we must have a dialogue. If you look at even the issues of material irregularity, these material irregularities, they are over the past 10 years. Now, I get here last year, August, I did what I did, you know, from investigating, from sharing those with National Treasury, with the AG, from, doing whatever one they could. At this point in time, I think that with the power that I have done all that is possible within my means that I needed to, including going to the executive authority to do that. There are also investigations that have been outsourced, and they are resourced for those ones. But in those investigations where the institution has probably last year they were in the cases that were instituted by the chief at the ACF. So the reports are in that environment for execution. So there is that kind of a dichotomy deficit. And for as long as we are not able to deal with that, it is going to be a problem. Because right now, AG is running a kind of project on material irregularities to say we have to show at an accounting officer level that we have done everything within our means to account for the resources that we have done. Within, actually, I was a man in the department when I started all the work. And even one has to speak with the AG to say, give me more time, because then in the past, you know, there wasn't much that we could really come up with. So that's why we took the initiative that we addressed to. And all those letters that we have received, we have sent with the So I think that is where it is. Now, what does the state chairperson? The kind of project by agency states that if that we are not able to exercise consequence management and we have not shown that we are able to deal with these matters, they would issue a certificate of death against the accounting officer. Now, what I can only do is to show what it is I have done within the period of time. We have sufficiently demonstrated that quite a bit of ground has been covered. But yes, part of the issue we need to deal with is also the legislation, the contradictory legislative prescripts that they guide us in terms of how we deal with these things. Even within the uniform environment, most of the procurement will be within the law environment. Most of the assets of the department will be within the law environment. And you would recall that when we presented the report of the cases that we had had the previous year, and we went down to two qualifications. And even the one that we presented now, the one on the jet fuel, is because that we were not fighting each other with the auditor general, because that we normally vote for a pre-approved supplier, and then when we advertise sometimes it should be a short notice. And then now where the problem was with this particular one was that the mode of transport changed. It was cheaper to do it by rail, which is the quotation we were given. But then when then the time for delivery occurred, whatever the problems were with rail, they had to use the road, and that also increased the price a little bit. But the other ones, we have done whatever we could, and in actual fact, as I mentioned, from the Antitrust General point of view, they have written the letters to the people that are concerned that they have now to decide by the chief of the defense force to the responsible member. There was an issue that was raised around the capacity. Clearly, our capacity, if we have 4,000 cases and we have 179 people, this is no way yet adequate. But I will also allow General Maposa to talk about it. But those are some of the challenges. And we were sitting with the issue where we were now spending on COE. And now on the other side, you see that the structures that have inadequate personnel. And hence, all along, the threat of 35,000. Now, in terms of delegations, one, because if you look at the 73 procurement centers, and we have also addressed also in the past that we are doing training because not all of them come from an environment of procurement. So the bigger the number of those that you delegate, then it means that you are going to have more challenges from a procurement point of view.
attention. So the other
I think the problem was on my side. You were playing a bit. Can you just put like 1 minute on what you think? Oh, I see. No, no, thank you so much. Because
I have
to
write
a few minutes, please.
No, I was not saying, Chairperson, all the issues, I wanted to raise a matter that also does have an impact on all these things that we are talking about, is the issue of our own internal audit. Our internal audit is not sufficiently capacitated because at the beginning of every financial year, our internal auditors made a commitment to the audit committee on the number of investigations they need to conduct on an annual basis. Now, the lowest we should be able to do as a department is about 160 audits. What this issue of capacitation is because if then we have a sufficiently properly capacitated audit, internal audit, we're seeing audits and they make recommendations. We should then, as a department, implement the recommendations that our internal auditors make, because then that also prepares us to then be able to interact with auditor general. And in certain instances, they will probably look at what internal audit recommended, whether the department did anything in actually implementing the recommendations that were made by internal audit. But because the structure is so small, I don't think we even do 60 audits a year, when we could have done about 160 of them a year. So it is actually something that is hampering us from responding to that. But Chairperson, I thought that you had noted some of the questions that were asked by honorable speakers, so I can actually before I hand over to CFO and the agency.
Yes, thanks. Ms. Pickers, can you repeat your questions? I think you had two questions.
Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
As I repeat all my questions.
I not all, you had two.
Capacitation. wise. And then in terms of the expectations, I think that we are trying our level best to deal with the issues, and then also we are looking at some of the interventions we can put in place to say that where there are issues, for instance, of the limitation of food, what is it that we are trying to do, and we are engaging with our offers to see whether we can be able to go to the AG to with a proposal that we have an MOU between them and the internal office, so that then where we are not able to give access to the AG, then office can do that and they can place reliance on what they do. They may not be happy, but at least it is the least we can do to try and show that we are trying to deal with it. Having described the size of the size of the secretariat, I think that we are trying our utmost best, but most of the time that one has spent, it is really trying to clear the backlog of the things that needed to be done, so that then we are also then able to say what are the things that we are doing so far. It's a two-pronged approach to say we are clearing, but at the same time trying to say what kind of systems that we want to put in place. And one of those that we were not able to have in place for the entire 2020 was the one which is attended by the chief of the services. And those are the ones that deal with the issues of violence, but also the issues that come from the AG, and we then give the chief of the defense services the opportunity to deal with them. I think that I would allow IG and General Makoto to talk about the specific investigations that have been completed. So those are some of the points that we have been dealing with. We have also started the process of looking at how we are going to how we are going to actually get the supply chain to come to the fire inspection, so that then it can reside within the CFO. And part of that is that maybe we may do it in a standard fashion, exactly with the big item. That are the ones that turn out to be much more problematic, and then see how we are able to do that. But what we are doing right now is that from the finance side, there are people that are on an ongoing basis that go to the different procurement centers and see how we assist them, and then to bring them up to speed even with the new regulations that may come from the national treasury. So on that note, Chairperson, let me hand over to the CFO. He will deal, I think if there were issues of the relation between the CFO and the CLOC, but those will also impact on the issues of asset management and the other issues, I think, that are CFO related. He will talk to them, and then we'll give the colleagues that they need these issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks,
Chair.
Who do you start with?
We start off with the CFO.
Thank you. CFO?
Thank you, Chairperson. I will indicate, Chairperson, that it might be a difficult question to answer in terms of the relationship between the CFO and the law division. The reason being, Chairperson, making very difficult to account for something that you are not responsible for. I need to clarify that he made it very, very difficult. Now, if you look in terms of the supply chain, which is the law and the logistic, as well as the asset, the CFO got nothing to do with those activities, so one cannot be accountable for those. And also, Chairperson, the Honourable Member Marae requested said that one needs to know the qualification of the CFO in order to perform those duties. I assume that the chairperson and Honorable Mugabe was asking a general question, not specifically with the CFO of Tibet. Chairperson, in terms of the qualification of the CFO, I will explain where does it come from, Secretary and the chairperson. If we remember during the invent of the PFMA, the positions of the CFO were categorized into three levels. One level at the director level, that one was requiring just a junior degree, but not any junior degree, was requiring the junior degree which measures in the Big Four, which are those Big Four, which is the financial accounting, cost management accounting, auditing, and taxation. The reason being why those four chapters, if I need you to
understand. I think it's clear as you are presenting it.
Yeah.
All right. Auditing, you know, clear why there's to be auditing.
Chairperson, when you move to the level at that time from 1999, what normally happened, the treasury normally issued the notices, keep on they are telling the accounting officers what to do. And then, if you are going to be appointed at the level of the chief director, you need to have an appointment decree which goes all these subjects as well. Okay, if it doesn't have, but your junior decree must have it. But you must have it.
Well, that's chief director finance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you move Jefferson to a CFO to the level of the DGG, in terms of the nominees, you are supposed to move at the level of the master's degree, which is the MBA, or to become a CA. Either CA or a master's in business administration. Those were required in terms of the nominees that were issued by National Treasury. Okay. That is what in terms of the qualification. But the chairperson, I need to highlight I normally see that the standardized is not normally stick to the old ones that were issued, but you need to have the Big Four, which is the Big Common Accounting, which got all these standard checks. Okay. Chairperson, I will need to, because some of us, we don't seem to see why in terms of the PFMA, were structured, that the finance division was structured the way it's supposed to be structured. If you remember, Chairperson, before 1999, when the Act was still Exchequer Act, at that time, government was only required to report on the income and expenditure before 1999. After 1999, when the PFMA came into play, it was the introduction to say we need to have the CFO. It was only starting from there to say we need to start to have the CFO because it got a broader reporting line. Those broader reporting line, you need to report report in terms of the complete financial statement, no longer income and expenditure. Now, that's why I was required to have a very trained and experience in terms of implementing the PFMA at the time. What are those things, Jefferson? You were supposed to move from the expenditure and income, and then start reporting on the full management account. What does that mean in terms of the full management account? That you need to report on the at that time it used to be called in country of performance. You need to report in terms of the statement of position. At the time it was called the balance sheet. You need to record the report.
From the sector.
under her. It means she does not have any control. If you look in terms of the guidelines of the accounting officer,
so that if the SITF does not have control over HR, who monitors, who assesses performance? Is it people in the uniform branch or is it the secretariat?
It's the uniform.
Yeah. A chairperson,
in the uniform. I mean, I did not get the SITF. Who assesses the SMS performance?
Given the same powers that I discussed of the
correct as to who we can investigate. So we investigate whether it's a CRN, CMS chief or a national chief, investigate everyone. Even these civilians. And what we said even last time was that the cases that involve civilians, they might have been sent to the civilian courts for finalization. Now the question that came even before last week was the issue of the long term time of cases. When the sector presented all the issues to government, what stopped us from being quick while we were waiting, but I just wanted to mention a few things that maybe will bring into perspective how investigation is done. We to remember that we get cases from complainants or others directed from the Secretary of the Chief of the National Defense Force. We do our investigation. However long it takes, we try to investigate as quick as possible. But from there, the court process is ensuing. And that court process is not determined by any commander. Is now a justice system where an accused person is got rights, we can change their lawyers, we can, that's where they think that we must get proper justice. So Chairperson, I think we needed to put that into perspective. But in terms of now the capacity of investigation, and if you look at the Defense Force or the DOJ, the way that it's formed, the military police in their originality were not formed to do criminal investigations. But due to the nature of our work and the society that we get in, we find that our members are involved in criminality because we are a microcosm of a society. So now we have to move into doing investigation, criminal investigation and sophisticated fraud and corruption cases. Now that Article 79 that was mentioned by the Secretary, you do not get them all at once being employed by the military police to do community investigation. We are following the footprint of the Defense Force wherever it was. Currently deployed in New Jersey. That grouping that is deployed in New Jersey has to have the military police in its own form. That means you have a limited number of investigators. So take those ones out that you don't have that in our business to be in there. Our border protection, which has got now 15 units, has got to have a section of the military police in each one of the 15 sub-units. And it is the test where we've got investigators. When we support OPCOPA, OPROSPA, all this deployment, you need investigations, you need crime prevention. Now, some of these military police, you find them that they are not always there because of this commitment and leave and go and courses and others. So you don't get that 179 to investigate fully that 4,000 cases. So in terms of the capacity, I think instead of trying to find things, we need to try and find solutions as to how we create the capacity of the military police. that we are seeing here, the investigation is complete. They are sitting in the court. And the contract now we talk about, like the one that the state court in Victoria, the commercial crime court. Everything is done, we must just go for trial. But we might be going for trial, and the person who's there to change their rights. So we don't want to afford them to say, no, we are going to try them today. Then we have to postpone according to their defense. The ones that came down to the government, they are on peace. But we will be giving the number of cases that we spoke about in terms of our agreement in the previous meeting for this month for the soon, so that we can have a clear judgment. And then the other question when you asked about whether the SECDEF can take action against uniform members, if according to the defense as itself, if the SECDEF has got the report on irregular or criminal matter, so that authority to instruct the board of inquiry, that can be done by any member that is authorized or capable of doing that, and instruct the military police to conduct an investigation that we can remove. And the other question was to be if you want to share the cover and collective management. Consequence management is an authority, one, in terms of the board of inquiries, that after the investigation of the board of inquiry, our legal recommends or supports the any recommendations made. If it's a recovery of the lost amounts or the damages that we found, the commander, which might be the service chief or divisional chief or the officer commanding, is charged with the responsibility to implement those consequence management of recovery of the funds or the losses. So the National Defense Force, in the meeting right now, which we are having, we are busy changing in terms of how the board of inquiries are going to be done, and Adjutant General is going to be giving that instruction that when the recommendations are made for consequence management, commanders must act. Unfortunately, there might be a bit of problems in terms of command, wherever we are. All our soldiers, they are soldiers and they are people. So we're going to be enforcing that. The second one is in terms of recovery by courts. Unfortunately, at this moment, we don't have an asset for future unit in the defense force. What we use in terms of that, we rely on SNPS when we do asset forfeiture. We do have good relationships with them for asset forfeiture for the cases that we investigate. So I can say that even if we don't have the capacity, in terms of our relationship with the SIU, with the Hawks, and the Asset Forfeiture Unit is growing from scratch to scratch. And I think we've even offered to train our people in terms of that, so that if we get an opportunity to open that Asset Forfeiture Station in the Defense Force, they are able to do that. And we amend the law with regard to that. And I'm not, in terms of the amendment of the law, I think that's something that the committee I can look into. But what I can say is that this should be a matter that should be set down and discussed, so that it does not cause unnecessary confrontation in terms of the Secretariat and Defense, or
their danger. Because if SADF has to command the ships in Cape Town, or the army, and or the navy, that means you're going to be having pillow from the problem. That's why I'm saying from the sector of energy, if you're talking about amendment, I think that is where maybe the committee can talk to the sector of chief and the military command at that level. Because commanding presence will need to be given before. But the oversight needs to be from the sector. So I think from the concerns that I had, I think as an organization, including yourself as a chairperson, we can revisit the defense, where there's impediments, where there's challenges, I think we can make. But I think this is where I would cooperation with the investigation, I think, is that. And implementation, and I think the chairperson, I'm trying to answer or to comment on all the questions that people think.
No, thank you so much. There will be no need to amend the Act if people were, you know, were performing as expected, you know, and were not appearing to be dragging their feet, you know. You see, that's where the problem starts, to say, but there's a problem. But like we are saying, sometimes the law may not be a solution to the problem. The problem is whether there's a will to act. If there has to be a disciplinary action, there's got to be a disciplinary action. There must be no two about it. If there has to be accountability of whatever form, there has to be accountability because you are exercising a responsibility. You see, so that is it. So, colleagues, maybe I don't know. Let me just the DM was in the meeting, was listening. He may want to say one of you, one or two or three words, and before we.
Just before the DM says something, if you allow me.
Okay, sure.
Chairperson, I think you are quite right again. It's about sometimes the attitude, whether the glass is half full or half empty. And I think if the approach is positive, yes, we don't need a legislation amendment because the well is then there. If the well is not there, and if we need to make amendments to get it right, then obviously we must do that. I just wanted to say that I think I have referred to that, you have referred to that, Honourable Mutle has referred to the interferon and the feedback with regards to any development on that investigation. I don't think the sector has responded to that, or I don't know what your ruling is in this regard. Thank you.
No, as I just let's not rush it. Remember, we gave them how many months? 3 to 6 months to investigate. So when was it? Was it in? Brian, when was it? Was it in March?
It was March. We met with them on the 17th of March.
All right. So let us not deal with it. The reason we allowed the minister to conduct an investigation to the Met was so that we cannot deal with it in a piecemeal fashion. Otherwise, sorry, Mosh, we will spoil it. And can you kindly just park it a bit? This time is coming. I think Brian has scheduled it. You'll see it when he presents the schedule.
No problem. Sorry that we interfered with you were eating and I jumped in and I forced you to respond. So apologies for that.
Okay. No, thanks.
So let me schedule it for sometime when we come back to receive the full briefing into the mat. So that I want us to pack it. I think you were all referring to it in passing, not that you were needing, you were asking for, let's pack it for now. It's fine if we make it as an example of why things are not going okay. Thank you. Are you agreeing with me?
Yeah, no problem, sir.
Thank you so much, sir. Any other thing that we are leaving out before I ask the DM to make a general comment?
Chairperson, just one aspect that the sector has referred to, and obviously one must, again, your comment is very relevant, what you've made is in terms of, you know, you don't need any amendment if it's the world is doing it in the right way. She has referred to that for any action or against certain people, she must make a recommendation to the chief of the SANDF. Obviously, that again emphasizes who's accountable, and that refers back to your initial point when we started to say that then the chiefs must account, and even the chief of the SANDF must account. Because if there are more than one accountable officer, depending on whether it is uniform or not, then obviously we must get that right. And hopefully the new chief of the SANDF will be more accessible to that. But even if that is not, if there's not a rule, then obviously legislation amendment will be the unfortunate to follow, which is not necessarily needed to do.
I agree. And Thabo, are you fine?
I'm good, Chair.
Okay. Vika, are you fine?
I'm fine, Chair.
Thank you so much. I'm sure the other colleagues are fine. I don't see any hand on the screen. I said, no, it's fine. Right. DM, may I just welcome you to make a general comment. We have heard us pouring out our frustration, and we know we're going to have a new chief. So there's a new SecDef, and impressed with what she has achieved so far. It's a new boom, and it's still sweeping cane. And but there's going to be a new SecDef, another new broom. So we'll have two brooms. So it means that the house must be, what you call it? I want to use an adjective that says it must be very clean, must be something clean. And DM?
No, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, thank you for the opportunity. I think the deliberations of the committee were very extensive and intense around the issues that were before the committee today, and I'm satisfied from where I sit, honorable members, with the discussion that were entertained. I also align my sentiments with the comments made by the committee members in commending the SecDef for limitations placed by the Act on the accounting officer arises and becomes a material constraint, in my view, in a situation where the chief of the South African National Defence Force does not carry out the recommendations of the accounting officer, because with respect to the cases that the SecDef instituted, the commissioned investigations around and now the findings, findings on which action corrective measures must be taken, if the office of the chief of the South African National Defence was executed when the Secretary of Defence had recommended be done, we would not be having a difficulty in the manner in which we are perceiving the situation right now. So it doesn't look like it is necessarily a legal constraint that is put by the law that is creating a problem, but it is perhaps the operationalization of the protocols that must govern this oversight. Because I do not recall this matter sitting before the COD, it's something obviously that the COD should deal with and deal with conclusively and bring a report to the committee if there is a view that we should approach the matter in some adjusted way different from how it was dealt with before. But it is possible that the SecDef could have raised this matter with the minister, because the SecDef is the advisor to the minister. Maybe in her engagement with the minister, she did have the opportunity to ventilate this. But the COD, unless of course it was a session of the COD where I was not in attendance, we have not had the opportunity to be appraised of this challenge. But it is clear that I think the next COD will have to just pause and entertain a discussion of this breach. There are two areas which I thought that maybe we also need to have clarity in. The first one is with respect to the jet fuel query. The report suggests that there are conflicting perspectives or views around it between the department and the Auditor General. It would have been useful if further information was provided around that to explain what the different opinions are on the matter. And if this has been dealt with and settled, information be provided as to how it was settled, what was the final decision on this case. The other point is just it's a framework issue. Framework issue. I may be wrong, because it is possible that the way I read what is contained in the presentation may not be accurate. But which for me, okay, it's not a problem. The detail that I wanted to understand is the involvement of the civilian agencies, law enforcement agencies, in relation to what the military police is dealing with. For instance, in relation to fraud, is the military police in the practice of bringing in or involving the civilian agencies that are having specialized skills of dealing with fraud, or the military police deal with the cases, they investigate the cases themselves and conclude and take the cases to the courts without involving the civilian agencies that are dealing with the commercial crimes? Because my take is that the military police, yes, they may be capacitated to deal with these different types or categories of crimes, but it is the civilian agencies that would have, you know, bigger capacities that at times may be required to dealing with the commercial crimes, because commercial crimes are quite an involved activity, and to understand the ramifications of some of the of the things that are done when fraud is committed, you may need expertise that may not necessarily be adequate of what we have within the police, military police. So it does that matter where I thought that clarity is not it's not very obvious about what is it that we are saying.
Talking, taking the military, taking the matters to court, or we are talking the investigation around this matter themselves. The other matter that also I thought should be, clarified is the where the report says there are cases which have been identified by the Auditor General that must be finalized by March 2025. Now, it's not clear to me the finalization is the finalization of the investigation or is the finalization of the cases in courts, in the courts. Because if it is investigations and we are saying that the, we'll complete investigations in 2025, what is so difficult in these investigations that must be conducted that should take 3 years? Of course, I may here be speaking out of completely sheer ignorance, but it sounds like something is not properly communicated. What is said in the presentation may not be what they intended to convey. Those are the issues that I thought I noted in our presentation today that I should comment about, Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. You are correct in everything that you have mentioned. Starting with the first point that I think this the COD must intervene, especially on matters that are likely to generate tension between the two offices, the SACDEF and the SFDF, because the SACDEF is required to account here on matters that are not entirely within her own jurisdiction because of limitation of scope. Yet the law places accountability on her, in that way she would need to be assisted.
continue. I hope that now that the two are at the beginning, the SACDF and the chief of the SNDF, and both of them are aware of the frustrations of this committee, they will try to streamline these areas of accountability in such a way that they will not create any impediment when it comes to placing information before this committee. And so that's one part. At least in this meeting, we heard that the HR, the whole HR division is within the uniform branch. The whole CFFC procurement branch is within the uniform branch. And in that way, but the SACDF, still retains accountability on all of those aspects. You see, so that's where the problem is. And like the SACDF said, when the drafters of the PFMA did not make any exception, they just, they came up with the one size fits all. And yet, in the environment of the Defense Force, and or in the environment within the department, there's some differences in the manner in which things are done. And there may be a good reason why the HR is within the Defense Force. There may be a good reason why CS procurement is within the Defense Force. But even with that, we can streamline lines of accountability on top so that we don't create a stalemate as it now we've become aware of. And that's the area that needed to be fine-tuned. That members are now saying, man, this limitation of scope on the part of the accounting office is becoming a problem. It will not be a problem if the two offices were actually we're understanding where in fact cooperating seamlessly in such a way that and one is able to function or to account effectively even though the responsibility lies elsewhere. So that's the thing that has got to be coordinated using the irregular using the disciplinary and consequence management is one of the examples, and I just want to leave it at that. And then the second point you have raised is the military police and with inadequate capacity. We've mentioned that in the past, but the police SAPS has specialized units within the police. If it's commercial crime, you have people who specialize in commercial crime, and in the military police, you would have that problem that they may not have as much capacity as there is within the police, the SAPS environment. As to how the two work together is an issue that we want them to come back on, so that we satisfy ourselves that matters don't get delayed or thrown out of court simply because we have not the investigative, because due to limited investigative power, what we call capacity. involves it's a collision between people in uniform and people outside. They do engage the agencies, the outside the agencies of government. But of course, these matters are under discussion, and they will come back to just tell us at what stage each one of them. We have an appointment with the Inspector General and the military bodies to deal with all these matters. Matters that are reported under investigation and matters that are before the courts, so that we see where the each one of them is in terms of being moved forward to conclusion. Colleagues, thank you very much again for your comments, and I'm saying what you raise is matters we are raising, and we're still trying to get to the bottom of each one of them. And with that, I think it's now 20 to 1. I can then take grant permission for the department to leave. We're dealing with the minutes after this, isn't it?
That's correct.
Yes, so we may then release the department, we may then release the DM. DM, your last word before you depart. Maybe just a second before you depart, and then DM before he departs.
No, from my side, Chairperson, I want to thank you, and I think that will enable the office to give you progress report on some of the issues, as they have had somebody who shouldn't wait to be called upon by the personal community, and that maybe we should also on our practice initiative to update you on some of the these matters. And we'll do so in relation to the other investigation on fraud and corruption related investigation. So we will be looking on your job. So thank you very much, Chairperson, and then we will really take the issue also to the COP, and we hope that when we meet the exam, we should be able to give a progress report on the outcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Your parting shot.
Chairperson and honourable members, on my side, really, there isn't anything to say. I think what the sector has just said now covers me well. Thank you very much.
It does, DM. Thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much, SECDEF, and all other colleagues who came to support the DM and the SECDEF. You are now excused. Colleagues, can I quickly go to the last item, minutes? Can you start the minutes, Brian, in the next 8 minutes? Mr. Mara, I want you to say something. Mr. Mara.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think this was a very constructive meeting, and it certainly gives me a lot of hope, so thank you very much for that. With regards to you've indicated now that there's a schedule sometimes for this meeting with regards to the interferon in the Dole matter. Will we also get at that stage a further feedback from SAPRA? Because I recall in our last meeting there was an indication by the Auditor General of what they found when they investigated the medicine, and then SAPRA undertook to go back and make sure about certain things and verify certain things. So will we also invite them then to give us that feedback, which is very relevant to the whole subject? I hope so.
Yes. When they come to present the report, we'll ensure that all those parties that we had at the beginning with us are present.
Thank you so much, very much, sir.
Okay. This reminds me. And then, Brian, and what do you want? So, I can see there are proposals the team in the office are making so far as the program for next year. And I want to just to drop it, and then
colleagues will be applying their mind. We will discuss this maybe on our way, on our return next term. The reason why we cannot have finalized the program today is because the Office of the House Chair still has not produced a framework within which we can then produce our own program for the next term. That's the only limitation. But all what the chair of cross committee said to us was that, and because we're going to have a short term, is that a term, the third term, Brian? Because the third term,
that's correct.
Because our third term is going to be very short due to elections on the 20th of October and parties wanting to be released much earlier so that they are out in the field campaigning. That we must consider and develop our big civil hands. He is aware that most audit reports will not be out by then, but he says that we did previously, we can use whatever information, including the quarterly reports up to the last quarter, the fourth quarterly reports, to generate the principal arm. And then we'll be given another amount after those reports have been tabled, the other reports have been tabled, to then update our what you call our principal arm. Peter? And Kevin, not Kevin, Peter Donias? And William?
Hello, Chair.
Yes, Chair. That's the approach that we are advised to take. Are you happy with that?
Yes, that would be the third term, so yes, we'll be able to do that.
If you can start working on this, right, using the information that we already have to generate the principal R for, you know, for our third quarter, right?
Okay, Chair.
Okay, so. All right, Brian, I now go back to you.
thereof. Colleagues, is this a true record? Is this a true reflection of what transpired at the last meeting? If yes, is there any, can I get any more in this record?
Keeping this thing, you may want to. Shall I, this is our last meeting, right? That's correct, sir. For this term.
For this term. And just talk to the thing. The colleagues will guide me.
Right. Can I continue?
Yes. Who's that, Peter?
Yes, sir.
Yes, continue, sir.
Just to recall that the one thing we said that we should also try and do what other committees are doing during the recess, that is oversight by the.
So this was the proposal that we've done. You know, I'm not sure which week we will do it, but there is a suggestion from the 21st to the 21st on the Monday, basically, and then on the Tuesday, the suggestion is that we go to the defense headquarters itself. You know, where the minister sit, where the chief sit, and so. And then, can you remember, this is a long outstanding matter that we said we actually need to have a close session with the minister. And the suggestion is that we then have that engagement with the minister. And those are the three issues that I can recall that we said. Remember the whole issues around the MEL not being able to support the defense force, but the staff force and aircraft and so forth. So that's one person. And then secondly, the contradiction issues that was raised several times, where the minister responded on parliamentary questions and saying, but these are actually questions that must be answered in a closed session. So those are the issues we thought we can engage the minister with in the first session. Then we'll have lunch, and then we can have an engagement with the new chief of defense force. You know, just maybe talk about his priorities, relationship with the Secretary for Defense, like we discussed now in this meeting, you know, what are the plans and the decision and so forth. So the next idea, what we then suggest is that we go and visit the Arms Corps facilities. We can first have an engagement, you know, either at Aspect or at Geotech with the Arms Corps board and staff, if they are present. But we close the time, we can actually decide what other issues we need to discuss. But then we go and visit, for instance, HAZMAT. Chair will remember that the facilities where they test certain, like PPEs and so forth, and design shoes and uniform, you know, things, and also related to hazardous materials. So we'll visit that, and then Geotech, that is basically the vehicle testing range. We can visit that on a Wednesday. And the Thursday, then we suggested, especially in light of what's happening in Mozambique, Cabo Delgado, and our possible involvement there. We thought it's very prudent that we actually go and have an engagement with the special forces. So we can then go into more information to visit the headquarters themselves. You know, then they brief us on their capabilities, and so forth. We have lunch, and then we move over to the special forces group. Mr. Maria will tell you this is a very impressive briefing that they received in the past, and I suspect that members will find it the same this time around. And the last issue, Chair, is just the visit to the DMV headquarters. Members will remember this is an issue that has been raised several times, you know, that we need to go to the headquarters itself and see what's happening there. You know, various issues, you know, like the organizational culture, in the organization, and skills development, skills board, and all those kind of things. And then, Chair, hopefully by then, the new Director General will be there, and then we can engage with her. We can have lunch, have a site visit of the airport itself, and then after then we break, and we go back to our hospital. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, there it is. Maybe we can throw some ideas, because number one, do you agree that we must utilize this week? Remember, we are all on constituency field, but utilize this week for an oversight visit. And if there is agreement, and do we, number two, whether we these areas we can add or delete on, and so on, depending on what you want to oversight during this period. So can I then hand over to you for comments? Yes, Mr. Manali.
Chairperson, from my side, I mean, I support the idea of this week. I think it's looking very constructive. It will be very, like, very productive, and I think we will deal with quite a number of issues. The only thing that I think that the interaction with the minister will be welcome. However, we've just touched on the fact of the 3 months in terms of the report. Maybe the third one is a feedback from her in terms of the progress on the interferon investigation report, because that will be then just more than 3 months after that has started, and maybe she has got information to share with us in that closed session meeting, which is an opportunity that we do not have on a regular basis.
Okay. Right. And any other comment? Can I then suggest that, Brian, let's give members time between now and tomorrow evening. Please, I'll grant you the last, I will make you the last item tomorrow evening at the Joint Standing Committee on Defense meeting. Are you fine?
Yes, sir.
Okay, sure. Oh, Peter and Brian, yeah. So that when we conclude it then, so that members chew over this between now and then. Colleagues, may I invite you to slip over this and then concretize it on tomorrow afternoon. Is that in order?
That's fine, thank you.
That's fine. All right. Colleagues, I think we have come to the end of the meeting. Let me thank all of you. Thank the support team for a good work. We remain a well-oiled machinery, more because we have been supported by capable individuals. With that, thank you very much, colleagues, for the time we meet again when we come back. But of course, we'll also be meeting on another platform tomorrow evening. With that, I adjourn the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you.